Every single day I feel it.
Artlist.io.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never know I'm blessed, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Let's go. Diamonds, what a great song. Let's go. It's Boy C-Rock in That One Studio on the What Are You Made Of show. What a great song based on our conversation prior to starting the show, Krista. But anyway, I'll leave that between us. We have Krista Mayshore in the building today, guys. She is a powerhouse digital marketing expert, six-time best-selling author, speaker, empowering agents, coaches, and entrepreneurs to optimize their business operations, generate lead conversions that drive success, and unlock the path to financial independence. For those of watching, you see a bunch of awards in the background. This lady's a badass. And, you know, I got to tell you, like, sometimes we have a lot of accomplishments and we still go through things sometimes that make us question and doubt. But we just need to remind ourselves where the hell we came from and what we're made of. And the name of this show was 5 years ago, I decided to name the show something because I saw that the journey to success was invisible. And most people just see the success, but they don't get to see the hard times, the difficult times, the sleepless nights, the stress. They don't get to see that shit. So I wanted to, you know, expose that on this show, but also it's something that I say to myself quite often when I'm going through tough times. I say, what are you made of, dude? What are you made of? Come on, look at all the shit you've been through as a kid all the way on up. You accomplished all of that and you made it through anything you've ever been through. What are you made of? So I talk to myself a lot, but this is a fitting name of a show, right, Krista, for today. And I'm glad to have you here, Krista. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Chris. He was not going to say this, but I was like basically crying right before the show started. I'm like, it's been tough lately. So he's talking to me right now, actually.
Yeah. Well, look, we all go through different seasons and different things. And, you know, I'm an empath. I can feel it. I know. And I've been there. So we're going to talk through some things from your past, things that you've got, you know, been through, accomplished, tough times, vulnerable, transparent stories. To inspire other people. And also, I do have a saying that it's never as good as as it appears to other people from the outside. And it's never, this is an important part for you right now, it's never as bad as you think it is from the inside.
Yeah.
So like I have that saying because, you know, I want people to understand that we all go through things. And when we're winning, you know, we're winning. When we're losing, but we got to learn. So anyway, Krista, I want to ask you the question that's written on the wall behind me. What are you made of?
Well, I would say I am a scrapper and a survivor, like in the best possible means. And you can take the girl out of the ghetto, but you can't take the ghetto out of the girl, kind of a thing, if that makes sense. I don't want, but the background is crazy. I'd be here for half an hour just going through that. But yeah, I'm pretty much hard as nails, but also like soft as a flower.
Yeah. Yeah. Good dichotomy there. That's a good dichotomy. Yeah.
I've never said that before, but what you asked.
Well, you know what? I get that a lot on this show. People say stuff here that they never said anywhere else or tell stories they never told anywhere else. But I love that about this show. But okay, so where did it all start for you? Like, where did you come from? Where did you grow up before we get into the real estate stuff and all that?
Okay, so I tell people that I kind of had like two childhoods, right? I had the childhood with this great, amazing family, amazing dad, amazing mom. And then at the same point, I had a very physically abusive mom. So same mom. So I haven't lived at home since I was 13. When I turned 13, I just got tired of it and ended up running away for like a year, got thrown into juvenile hall for a couple months. Then I got sent to a group home called Hidden Hills Group Home for Girls, where we were made fun of and chastised and made you feel like you were even worse than you thought you already were, because you got dropped off this big, huge green bus labeled, we're screw-ups. And then from there, I got sent to a group, a foster home. So it was a great upbringing, but also a very hard one. And then when I turned 18 in the foster home, they said, hey, you got to go. Money's not coming in anymore. And I had to kind of figure it out from there, which is what I've done every day since.
Damn. So my daughter's 11. I can't imagine 2 years from now, her just running off. Like, where was this, in California?
Yeah, it was in California. My dad felt the way you did. I mean, when I left, he literally bawled and begged me not to go, but he didn't know what was happening. And that was the only time my dad only cried the day I left him and the day his mom died. So I understand. Yeah. I feel the same way. I would die if my kids ever left. I can't even imagine.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's crazy to think about. So, and back then times were a little different too, but nonetheless, while you were doing that from 13 to 18, did you get into the bad road? Did you go down a bad road with drinking, drugs, anything like that at that time because you didn't have guidance or?
A little bit, but I mean, once I got thrown into juvenile hall, so there was about a year, like I maybe smoked pot a couple times, but I was like a really good kid that was trying to escape an abusive situation, if that makes sense. So it was kind of like I got thrown into these situations I didn't really belong in. I mean, like when I was in juvenile hall, I watched this girl slam this other girl's head into the porcelain toilet and teeth are flying everywhere and blood's everywhere. And I was like, oh my God, I don't belong here because I didn't belong there, right? And so I didn't really belong in these situations that I was in because I didn't tell anybody what was going on, if that makes sense. And I don't want to get into it because this is about marketing, but I didn't belong there. I was a great kid. And so once I got into the foster home, I made really good friend decisions, had the same friends from there. And I just, you know, I just made a choice like I want more for myself. And so whatever it took to have that happen is what I did. And so I got loans. I worked full time. I put myself through college, you know. Kind of it all goes from there.
And then when you got out of college, what was your first kind of career?
I was a teacher. I became a teacher. I became a teacher. I got a master's degree in education. I wanted to be a principal. And then my daughter got super, I got married, which I thought was the love of my life. I ended up, my daughter got really, really sick. So I left teaching to stay at home. And then at the time, my husband at the time ended up having an affair. And that's a whole other story. And so I had to leave. I had to like figure it out. And that was when I got into real estate because we had just bought a brand new home. The money was drained from the accounts. I had two little girls under the age of three and I was like alone. And I had to, that's scrappy came out again. So I had to sell a lot of homes. So I sold 69 homes my first year, kept the kids in the home, you know, built a gorgeous backyard and became a top 1% agent 17 years running after that.
What year was that you got into real estate, did 69 homes?
2001.
Okay. So that was, okay. I got in 2005. So 2005, things were jamming back then. And obviously the home prices per home were a lot lower then.
Yeah.
So the cool thing about real estate is as you sell homes and the prices go up, your income goes up for the same amount of sales, basically. So it's a great thing. What was your success? How did you sell 69 homes your first year? Like, what did you do that, you know, led to that success so fast?
So I don't care what anybody says. It's like you just work your butt off, right? And so, but I will tell you, there was a unique thing that I've been able to do every year in each business. And that is I got in the business and I thought, who are doing well and how can I emulate what they're doing? But how can I also find areas of opportunity? And so I'll give you an example. And this is going to age me, right? It's how old I am, but back then, people were doing like black and white flyers, let's just say. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to do 4-page colored brochures. I'm going to put a CD on the sign that has 50 pictures in it with a little label with my contact information, like things that nobody was doing. And people would put like their picture at the movie theater. And then we'd pay to have like a video at the movie theater and have the video run, you know, instead of just having a picture. Like nobody was doing any of those things. And then like I'd see the top producer put herself on the moving van. And so I'm like buses, you know, so I went on the buses and then I would do like a commercial on Comcast, like the local TV channel. So I just was willing to invest and get, spend money, take out loans to be able to use for marketing and spend that money to put myself out there in a way that nobody else was. And quickly I just like rose to the top.
Yeah. And well, here's the thing, like most people that get into business don't understand marketing, the importance of it. The fact that if nobody knows who you are, how the hell can they work with you?
Yeah.
Right. They focus on everything else, right? Administration and their tech and all this other stuff. Right. But they don't focus on getting known.
Yeah. Oh, and that's kind of what you do, right? Like there's a reason why people spend, you know, $7 million just for the 30-second spot to be on the, you know, Google, McDonald's, Pringles. We all know who those people are. Why would they spend money? Because they understand the importance of brand awareness. Like I understood the importance of, I don't care. It doesn't matter who I know. It matters who knows me. I need to make it. My exact words were, anytime somebody thinks about real estate in my area, I'm going to make sure they think about me. And it came from like, who is this person doing this stuff to who is this person? You know what I'm saying? It like changed really quick.
But how did you know to do that though when you first started?
Well, I hadn't lived at home since I was 13. I had no choice. I was like, I honestly, it was more of, I was so adamant about keeping my daughters in their home safe based upon me not living at home since I was 13 and all the stuff I went through, that like the instinct took over to, you've like, there's no choice. You've got to figure this out. So I became a workhorse, number one, and I just became very different. And year after year, like I continue to do it. So, you know, I'm like in every aspect of my industry, I'm always, you know, like I'm doing funnels and no one even knows what a funnel is in real estate, right? Like, you know, there I'm doing Facebook ads and no one even knew what Facebook ads were and in real estate. So it's just of always seeing, looking outside of the industry, like what are the outside big brands doing and how can I emulate that and position it to whatever it is that I'm doing, whether it be real estate, lending, it doesn't really matter, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, differentiation. We talked about this earlier in the beginning of this. Is like I didn't like the mortgage industry because it was so hard to really differentiate yourself. And I was one of the outside people too. And I started a podcast before people in the mortgage industry started podcasting, becoming an influencer, doing all this stuff online with content, crazy, just pumping content, right? And everybody in my company was like, dude, this guy's crazy. What are you doing? And they never could get behind me. Like the ones that when I was working for a company, they never got behind me. I'm like, guys, this is the way we got to be known. Nobody gives a shit if it's the company's called XYZ. They care about the person they're going to work with, totally. You know, and you got to build that brand. So, no, I totally understand that. And then, so do you remember the time where you really felt like, oh man, shit, I got this. It's like clicking.
Yeah. It was like after the first year and the top producer, like that ruled the county was like, let's partner. And I'm like, and I was so excited that she wanted to partner with me. And I felt like, and then she just effed me over like crazy, moved 4 hours away while I ran the business for a year until finally I got smart enough and said, hey, I don't think this is working. Can we, you know what I mean? Like I should have known then, duh. Like if somebody wants you that bad, there's a reason you don't need them. And like after that horrible partnership, I told myself I'll never partner with anybody again. And it took me like 17 years before I ever let somebody in again, just to realize never again, like no one is going to work harder than you. And no one quite frankly has the ethics. Like I'm very ethical. And I, my thing is if you have to ask if you should do it, the answer is no, right? Like if I have to ask you, think this is okay, this is right, the answer is no, it's not. So yeah, that was when I realized I wasn't smart enough to realize it the right way.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. Like I've had partnerships and stuff that went awry and I take full responsibility for it, you know,
but
it's just not always the right fit.
Yeah.
So before you started doing funnels and things, right, did you scale your real estate business with team members? And
so I've never had more than two people work for me. So when the market, when I became I was a buyer's agent the first year, sold 69 buyers. And so imagine that back in there, like when you have to do Thomas Guide and like map out your directions, it was like, oh my God, I'd rather die than do that. But then I realized like something's wrong here. There's no way that these houses could be selling from $100,000 to $200,000 in a week. And I was like, there's short sales coming up. So I started making these packages and sent, it was like, probably not the best. Like when I tell you this, you're going to think probably shouldn't have done that. But I would send these packages like, let me knock your socks off. So I put like Pop Rocks and a sock. And then I put my whole REO package. It sounds kind of sexual now, like, let me rock your socks off, right? But like, I didn't think that through very well. But I ended up getting like 13 different asset management companies. And then I became like what they call the foreclosure queen. And I sold, you know, my best year, I sold 169 foreclosures with just an assistant and a TC as a solo agent. And I did, REOs forever. And then once that was a great 5-year swing where, you know, we sold hundreds and hundreds of foreclosures. And then that dried up and got great. And I was like, oh crap. I went from selling 169 homes to 12 because all the asset management, the market got good, which was amazing. And so I realized I had to completely reinvent myself. It was almost like I was brand new again, because for that whole 5-year sprint, I wasn't marketing myself, obviously. It was like these houses were disgusting. And then I decided, okay, I need to market myself in these neighborhoods. So I started doing neighborhood marketing and becoming a neighborhood specialist. And when they didn't have funnels back then, so I would just do like postcards and all, you know, all these things. And then now we do like funnels, like neighborhood community funnels, where we specialize in, like, if you do an open house, there's like they click a barcode and there's like a funnel for Deer Ridge for buyers, a funnel for Deer Ridge for sellers. It's all specific to that neighborhood. So it elevates your authority in that neighborhood. And then we create them for all the different neighborhoods. So it looks like you're an expert in all the neighborhoods. Again, just different ways of being different and unique, you know, and that's what I teach my students to do.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. So it's like all celebrity. When I talk about celebrity, I'm talking about being known in that industry, being that one, right?
Yes.
It's all manufactured. It's all manufactured. Yeah. Like you got to create the perception before you're actually the expert.
Yeah. Perception right. reality.
Yeah. And the thing is that then when people start to come to you and then you perform for them, then you are the expert, but you got to be it first. Like you got to, so when people see you out online and they're like, oh shit, I'm going to use this lady because I see her everywhere. And sometimes it's subconscious. They don't even know. Mm-hmm. So did you ever get the listing game down like and dial in and become the like that yes. part?
I'm impossible to beat on a listing. So like, let me just give you an example. So we'll run Facebook camp. So first of all, I have this thing called, you know, when before you arrive. And you need to earn the right to ask. And every single marketer should write this down. Your job is to win before you even get there, but you have to earn the right to ask. And what most, so we run brand awareness campaigns. Well, we'll create video content and run brand awareness campaigns without any call to action. And this will make your cost per acquisition go down, your cost per lead go down, right? And so basically you'll create video content going over specific avatars, so sellers. And I'll create videos about selling based upon a specific problem that sellers are having. So for example, back when sellers were like, I want to sell my house, but I'm afraid I won't be able to find a replacement property. So it's like, you're thinking about selling your house, but you want to sell your house, but you're afraid you won't be able to find a replacement property. Then they watch this video and then I would retarget them, right? Oh, great. And I more content about that to where finally, after I gave them enough information and solved a big enough problem, I'd say, hey, if you'd like a home evaluation, click here. Then they click the home of it. But most people start with, click this, what's my home worth? Get a home of it. They start there. I am there, right? So then they're more likely to give me their information, be honest about it. So then we'll like send, I'll drop off a copy. I'll show you. Like I drop off a copy of a book that's specific to like what to expect when selling your Deer Ridge home, right? And then I'll send like a 17-minute marketing video that talks all about like digital marketing, geo-targeting, funnels. We'll show how we get like hundreds and thousands of comments on listings. We'll show how we bid out Zillow. Then we'll drop off a seller guide. Well, hold on a second. First.
Yeah, I got it running around, man. Like, look at the power that I have. Like, I bring up a topic and I get her out of her seat.
Yeah. So we'll drop off like this box beforehand. The QR code goes to a seller funnel. And then inside the box, of course, is like all these things that differentiate myself. We've got a copy of like the book in there, the marketing guide. So like they're getting all this stuff dropped off just when they request a market evaluation. And we also send this before a listing presentation. Everything also gets sent digitally. And then they're getting a 17-minute marketing video that they watch before I get there. And like hands down, you will never beat me on a listing presentation. And I will charge full commission.
What's full?
6%. Yeah. Well, some people charge more. Yeah. I mean, I would do it for 5, sometimes or 5.5, depending on like it's $1 million property or, you know, for where I live, it's a lot. So I'm not stupid. I'm not going to, you know, but I'm rarely, rarely lost. And if I did, it was because I talked too fast or something. Krista, my grandma's 90. You might talk a little too fast for her. I'm like, okay, I get it. And yeah, how many times did I hear from other dumb agents like, Krista, you do so good because you're pretty. And I'd be like, okay, you're right. Thank you. You know what I mean? Like,
that's hey, use whatever you have. Who cares?
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, you're right. I keep thinking, and here I am doing all this ninja stuff, you know, in the background. Yeah. So
that's
that's
why I've been so successful because of my good looks. I'll just lean into
it. Well, just because, you know, when I was like, Chris is pretty cute. Like I looked at it beforehand, then I got you in person and your cute level went up because you were cool, you know?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I've received that. So, so let me ask you this on this funnels. Okay. So you ran funnels for real estate, but then you got into coaching as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So coaching, why did you decide to start doing that and add that to your plate? Like what was the,
because I got like, to where a was point that where moment? I just got sick and tired of real estate. I mean, kind of like what you were saying, how, I mean, you know, the year I left real estate, I made about $1.8 million in commission and I didn't realize how miserable I was. Like I sold 154 homes, 169 homes. Like I was so, even though I didn't work weekends or nights, I did because I was on the phone constantly and it was just so much. And I would rather sometimes be a sex slave in Africa than have to sell another house. Like I got to the point where I can't. Plus I miss teaching and I realized I'm really good at this. I can help more people. And so I almost overnight left, called my brother and said, yep, I'm leaving. You're going to be the new Homes by Krista Face. I'm going to be a full-time coach. And I just made the plunge. I was tired.
Gotcha. And then he took over your book of business. And like all your my book of business. Database and everything?
Yes. Not exactly the way I did.
Of course.
My fault, because I kind of it was like the wicked stepchild, you know, my real estate company, because I was building this coaching business, and we've done really well. Like we've been in it for 6 years and we just hit $60 million in coaching. We were very profitable.
That's awesome.
Yeah. First year horrible, like it is, you know, harder like it is now. And then we had some really good profitable years where it was just unbelievable. Like we were doing, you know, $1 million a month in profit from the coaching. And then the past 12 months has been a lot more difficult. Kind of like I was talking to you about earlier, where it's like, you know, just with the transition in the market and the interest rates and inventory, agents aren't buying as much. Plus I'm building another business where I'm teaching experts, coaching consultants. This, I call it the $1 million month model. So it's like, I'm kind of in a position right now where I was when I first started my original coaching business, where I'm using the money from my real estate business to keep my coaching business open. Right. Because it takes a lot of money to build a business. And, you know, whether you're in real estate or anything else, coaching is no different. And so now we're taking money from our coaching business, coaching real estate agents, to build the experts, you know, consultant business. And so I'm in that transition right now. And I think I forgot how hard it was. And now I'm like, oh, why did I do this? You know? So it's a constant matter of like, and nobody ever tells you the truth about stuff like that. Like, geez, it's hard, man. And so it's been, you know, it's a lot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so you could work at a salary job making 50 to 150, even 200,000 and know exactly what's going to be coming in every day, and you have that ceiling. Or you can do what you're doing now and you can have these peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
And the good is so much better than having that salary job, but the worst, it's a lot worse.
Exactly. So, well, I mean, heavy is the heart that wears the crown, right? Like, I mean, last month my overhead was like $730,000. Right. And we hit $1 million last month, but I'm like, wow, you know, and I think my profit last month, I'm totally getting way too into things, was like 175,000 for the month. And I was like, you guys, I made more than that when I was a realtor. Like, to have this many employees and this, like, we've got to change a few things. And I think I've let it get to a point where I was hiring too many people. And the more people you have, the harder it is to keep managing of them, and the more they kind of don't do, if that makes sense. So we're in a position now where we have to make some major changes, and it's going to be hard. You know, I've let it get away from me, if that makes sense. And so now,
yeah,
I've got a ring in it, whatever you call it. And it's just been, it's going to be a lot of difficult choices that are going to be made that I should have made a year ago. I knew I should have made it a year ago. I kind of like what you said. And now I'm like, shit, you know, I should have done this. And that's why I was a little bit, when we first got on the call.
Well, here's the thing. So I do a lot of work on myself, right? And one of the things I realized is over the last year is that if you don't confront something, the sooner you don't confront it, the more it builds and builds and builds, and you're going to have to confront it at some point.
Yeah.
So you might as well confront as soon as you feel the feeling and be on top of it, because if you do that, you also feel lighter and more creative. My creativity was suffering for a while over the last 6 months, and I was trying to figure out why. And it was because I wasn't confronting things. And people, right? Situations. Sometimes I'm the kind of guy, when I'm building a business, I don't want to look at the bank account because I think it'll stress me out from doing what I'm doing. And I know what I need to do. I need to market and sell, market and sell, build, market and sell. Focus on that. Well, like, if you don't look at your bank account, you don't know what's in there. So I always play this game with myself. I don't know if you've ever dealt with this, but I always play with play this game that it's so much worse than it is. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like I gotta sell. I gotta work. And that way, when I do find out really, and I do confront and see what's going on, I have an idea, by the way, but like when I do see it, it's like, oh shoot, it's not as bad as I thought it was. But
that's
gives
how
me
I
that grind.
Too. Yeah, I've been the same, but I mean, so like I thought I was like writing a check and it was worse. But then once I realized, okay, you made 175, but still for all the risk, like to have the risk of a $700,000 overhead, 50 employees, not cutting it. I'm thank God I'm not writing a check, because I did a couple months ago. I was writing like, when you make 400,000 or 500,000 a month, we had a really bad quarter. I'm like, you know, but so it's like, okay, yeah. I lost $1 million, but now it's like, okay, now I'm only making 175. No. And I know that sounds to people like 100,000 a month. No, it's bullshit. Not when you have all, it shouldn't be that way. And it's quite frankly, extreme ownership. It's my fault. I should have made changes a year ago. I didn't want to displace people, get rid of people, all the things. Hopefully none of my employees are hearing this right now. So, you know, but it's to the point
where
I'm
live right now,
you know, like I have to, you know, I have to, and it's a sucky decision because I love people and I love my team, but we just, it's hard, you know? And so I'm at a point now where like in 6 months, I'm going to be like, shh, I should have done that sooner. And even if we, honestly, if we were doing more profitable, I still need to make cut half my employees because I know that there's too many of them that are getting too complacent.
Yeah, no, it is. And emotions got to stay out of it. It's got to stay out of it or you're going to make bad decisions. So I wanted to touch on
honest with you on here. I'm just like, oh God.
I'm like Howard Stern. I just draw this out of people. They do.
just the
way it is. So, but we're not live right now. So this will get put out later, but nonetheless, when you're making the kind of money that you're making, okay. A lot of people hear this money and they're like, holy shit. But what are you doing with your money as far as getting it to multiply besides reinvesting it back in the company? Right. But like, and obviously, look, you live your lifestyle, whatever lifestyle you live. I'm not trying to talk about that part. I'm talking about when you have money that's surplus. The idea is to get money, keep it so that you can do something with it so that it can make babies.
Yeah.
Right? Have you been a good investor or do you invest or like what are your thoughts on that?
So I'm definitely could have been way better. So I'll give you some examples. My goal as a realtor was to buy one house a year or one house every 2 years cash. And so I did that. I bought, you know, we had like 12 houses paid for cash. We don't own any money on anything. But I should have, and I had that like nervous, I think when you come from a foster home and you don't have any money and you like, you see, like I was holding on to it too much. So my strategy was keep it paid for cash. When the market crashed, I didn't lose anything. I started buying properties. Right. But had I been more of a smart investor and instead of buying cash, putting down 30%, and then using that other money to buy three more properties, I would have 10x'd my wealth. Does that make sense? So no, I have not been a good investor that way. But I do own multiple properties, but right now we're in the process of, I think we're going to have some crazy stuff going on. Like I sold a lot of things about 3 years ago too soon because I thought, oh my God, the market's going to crash. Like I didn't lose any money when the actual market crashed in 2008. That's when I bought quite a few properties, but throughout that 5 or 6 years, actually 10 years, but the 3 years I should have kept the properties that I sold because I would have doubled my money on them, right? But now I'm at a point where I'm like, I'm going to start buying some Bitcoin. So one of my things is I just got finished going to a top 10 mastermind with Tony Robbins, Dean Graziosi. I was like in the room with just me and Tony. He's like this close, right? Last year too, because I was number three this year and number two last year. And they were like, you're in this room talking about things that nobody talks about or wants to share, or actually you can believe, right? And when you see other people doing things that they have massive, like they've really researched and they're $20 billion people. And you're like, okay, maybe I should do that. When they have no vested interest is when you know you should do things. I'm actually at a point now where I'm going to be selling some of my properties and actually buying Bitcoin with those properties, believe it or not. And not having as many investments property wise, because I feel like what's happening in the world right now is really scary. And what's happening with our money and the amount of money they're loaning. And like, it's just so scary to me right now. And I love so I have not been the best investor, but with that said, you know,
but this is good because I want to know these kind of things. The more vulnerable and transparent we can be, we help people, because somebody might be getting ready to come into some money and they're like, shit, I better listen to this and leverage the properties. Like it's okay to borrow money and use leverage.
Oh, I'm going to sell a couple of them and straight up buy Bitcoin. Like I'm selling my two properties in Idaho to buy Bitcoin. I just sold four properties in Florida, but I'm taking that to buy my husband's building, which I might not do that now. I'm freaking out lately. So, I mean, I'm just getting like the home we live in. We own it outright. Like our kids each own a home. We own them outright. All of our kids' homes. We're going to keep those, but the rest I'm like, I'm thinking I'm going to buy some Bitcoin.
Yeah, no, I agree. You definitely should put something in. This is not financial advice.
No, but
Bitcoin
no.
should be a percentage of your assets. Definitely.
Yeah.
And we should have got in like 6 years ago, 7 years ago. But
God, I had the opportunity to, but my fear, like I was at a mastermind. Russell Brunson said, buy Bitcoin. I didn't do it out of fear. And now I'm like, mother effer, I would have made like $1 million by now, you know?
Yeah. You can't worry about it now. All you can do is go forward. So all right, listen, last thing I want to talk about here, by the way, you guys can go to KristaMashore.com. Check her out on Instagram, KristaMashore.com, Krista Mayshore on Instagram. Final thing I want to talk about is the NAR situation and all that. How's that going to, what are your thoughts on that? How that's going to impact the real estate market really? Because I have my thoughts.
I did a whole video on the truth about the NAR. It's people are being so stupid and freaking out. It's nothing. I also did a whole video on, and I spent about 40 hours on each video to absolutely say, here's what you say to sellers to get them to pay a full commission. Here's what you say to buyers to get them not to worry about it. Here's the truth about what's happening with NAR. It's a bunch of bull crap. People are freaking out for no reason. It's nothing. It's just learn how to show not just your value, but learn how to explain the impact on a seller, on a buyer, on a listing agent, on a selling agent, and quite frankly, on the whole entire global economy, which real estate is 1/5. If buyer's agents can't get paid anymore, they're going to figure out a way how to do it. It's not rocket science. It's you don't pay a buyer's agent's commission. You don't have to, but if you don't, most likely you're not going to get as many people to look at the home, and most likely you're going to lose money. Bottom line, the amount of first-time buyers was about 33% last year. First-time buyers do not, of the U.S., do not have extra money to be paying for a commission. The other, like over 430,000 of the loans were actually veterans. Veterans are not allowed to pay commissions. So it's like you're taking about 45% of all buyers and saying, of the buying population and saying you can't do it. What do you think is going to happen? It's just exactly like everything else in history. Things are going to change. Quit worrying about it. And just go to work. It's a bunch of crap.
Listen, here's the thing. So I know that there's an ulterior motive. Okay. Number one, tech companies that wanted to get into this business and get the agents out, they press for this. And number two, home values will drop because of what you just said.
Yeah.
If they continue to push this and there's less buyers, VA, first time home buyers out of the market, less demand, the supply will start to go up and that lowers prices. And so that's what they're not telling everybody that. That's not the narrative they're going to talk about, but they will say that, this will bring house prices down. They don't tell you why or how. It's because that less buyers.
Yes.
Supply goes up, less demand, price goes down.
A bigger gap from the poor, the rich, and the middle class. Like in 10 years, there's not even going to be a middle class. That's why the rich are the ones buying Bitcoin and the poor, because they know like that's their only way out. I mean, I'm not a conspiracy at all, but like when you start hanging around the rooms with other people that are billionaires and multimillionaires and they're actually doing the things that everyone else is telling you not to do, you learn. I mean, we can have a whole conversation about pharmaceutical company and COVID shots and all this crap and all how, I mean, it's just really sad when you learn what's really going on in the United States and in the world. And it's disgusting, quite frankly. So what you're saying is exactly right. Sorry, total tangent.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. All right. Well, I got to wrap this up because I don't want to keep you too long, but I hope you feel a little bit better now that you've been on the show.
Since I do.
We started. Thank you. And go attack and confront whatever you're dealing with, because it'll work out the best that way. Of course, I told you that earlier. So, but listen, Krista May Shore's been in the building, and it's me, your boy C-Rock, signing off from That One Studio on the Whittier Media Show. Krista, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Chris.
Music licensing reimagined.